Hello, and welcome to The Raw Bar. I'm Goddess Cecilia, pleasure educator and consultant, and I will be your host. I've invited my friends and colleagues to sit, snack, get real, and probably a little salty about sexuality and pleasure. We've also saved a seat for you. And because of the nature of this podcast, we want to make sure that you're aware that there will be conversations about sexuality, sexual acts, probably some spicy language, and a bunch of other things that are definitely not appropriate for younger ears. So give yourself some solo time if you can. Grab a drink like tea, wine, water, or boba. Don't forget your snackies. Ease in and get comfy. Here's to a pleasurable time together. This season of Raw Bar with Goddess Cecilia is brought to you by MysteryPleasureBox.com. Surprise yourself with a subscription to MysteryPleasureBox.com, a fun and affordable way to discover new sex toys and novelty products every month, billed and delivered discreetly. You get an arsenal of potions, lotions, sex toys, and bedroom accessories picked by industry experts. Every box you receive is packed with high-quality, full-size, brand-name products from brands you know and love. So sign up at MysteryPleasureBox.com and use code GODDESS for 10% off your first box. Welcome to the Raw Bar. Let me read your bio and then we'll start with the questions.
Okay. Cool.
All right. Shanae Adams is a sexuality professional from Denver, Colorado. Different part of the country. All different part of the country. A more mountainous part of the country. Yeah. Shanae has provided education on sexuality topics, both domestic and abroad. On her YouTube channel, Honest Sex with Honestly Nay, her mission is to provide normalization, explanation, and melanated representation. She takes this mission one step further with the creation of the Chrysalis House, a sex-positive collaborative with the goal of supporting marginalized groups in Denver. Shanae received her master's in clinical counseling from Adams State University in May 2020. Congratulations. At the beginning of a whole pandemic, you did it.
Yeah.
Her practice, AI Therapeutic Services, focuses on sex positivity and trauma with the goal of helping people become the beings they desire to be. You do a lot.
I do. I really do. And I do. Can't even take it back. Now I'm definitely at this stage of my career where, because when I started the career of sexuality professional, I was I don't know how to do this, but I know that I need people. I know that I need people to know that I'm out here. I know that I just need to go and get in people's faces. And so I was running around with purple and green hair. Look at me. I do the things. Be my friend. Be my colleague. And now it's I don't have to do that anymore. Now there are people who are emailing me hey, heard about you. Can you do this? Can you do that? And I'm okay. This feels in a better space, but I still have that same, gotta go out and rage kind of energy. And I'm tired. I don't want to do that anymore.
Well, let's start with what is your sex ed origin story?
Sure. Yeah. So my sex ed origin story, I always like to say I was the sex pert of my friends in middle school, high school. And that's because I was sneaking and watching Skinamax late at night. Skinamax is Cinemax after 10 p.m. So I was watching Skinamax and I was watching Real Sex or Cat House, or my favorite show was Talk Sex with Sue Johansson. And so I remember many nights just watching this old white lady just talking about sex and sexuality like it wasn't a big thing. She had these little tools and these little dolls to show you things and these diaphragms that were are these pictures and things that were being presented, not from a fear, shamey standpoint, oftentimes sex ed in schools can, but to be yo, take a look at this. Here's how uteruses work. Have you heard of endometriosis? Let's talk about its impact on sex and on pleasure and being very pleasure focused. And so I just remember thinking yo, if she can do this, I can do this. I don't know how, but I can. And so I just started on this quest to figuring out how And here's how I've done it. And that's how I've gotten here.
And I know you recently have a new YouTube video all about your sexuality journey, your sexuality professionalism journey. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, my journey to becoming a sexuality professional and what's next for me, which is getting my doctorate in clinical sexology.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Whoo, all the letters.
Right? I feel like they're Pokemon. I just got to catch them all.
Yes. All right. So I want to ask, like, how Sire came into the picture. And so, like, explain who Sire is and then, like, how did they emerge?
Yeah. So Sire is my pro dominatrix persona. So I do sex work. I am a professional dominatrix. I specialize in sensation play, including impact play, electro play, temperature play. I also do shibari, and I do shibari for, like, beauty, and I also do shibari for bondage. And so Sire came, I feel like Sire has always existed. I feel like I am very kinky. I've always been a very kinky person. I was very kinky before I had the language to be able to say I'm very kinky, and before I even had the wherewithal to be like, in order to kink safely and ethically, you have to have these tools or these understandings. And so for me, I to be honest, I slipped and fell into sex work in the sense of...
You're just like walking along.
And, then and now there's a whip in my hand and white men are giving me money. Like, I don't know how we got here, right? I think that for me, I was like, I have always been a very kinky person, and I also am an educator. I love teaching. I love passing on knowledge that I have. And so it was a lot of, as I'm hitting these like sexuality conferences, these sexuality things, these sex positive places, and learning more about like my kink and my dominant side in expressing that and teaching people that, now I'm getting clients who are like reaching out and being like, I feel safe with you. I like what you do. You're creating this container that I want to experience. And so it's really, I like beating people. And people were like, we like to be beat. And it really came together in that sense. And so a lot of clients are women. And I have some men of color and a lot of white men as my clients. But my women of color clients are some of my favorite clients, because I think that there's something like, what I really love about kink is the empowerment and the self-advocacy. I always like to say, if you can fight for your pleasure, you can fight for your freedom. And so kink is definitely a vehicle of activism for me. Kink is a political expression for me. And so being able to create a container for women of color where we're not plagued by the women and femmes of color, where we're not plagued by kind of the constructs of society that say we're only tied to our labor. You know, our value is only in what we can do. We shouldn't prioritize our pleasure. We shouldn't prioritize our rest. And so in being able to dismantle that for my clients and give them a tool that helps them not only with their self-identity and their self-advocacy, but a tool that they can apply to other areas outside of their lives that's going to make the rest of their experience more empowered, that's really what I love using kink for.
I love that so much. Actually, one of the things that I wanted to talk about, in addition to the kink stuff, which we'll definitely be getting into, is your performances, which, like, I think from the very get-go, when I first got to know you, I think we met at Sex Geek Summer Camp bus. Sex
Geek Summer Camp.
On that traumatic-ass bus. It's fine. It's not fine, but it's fine. But getting to know you from there, it was like, oh my gosh, like, you had some amazing work where you were like taking songs and like remixing them. And it was so good. And it was like I feel like at that point, it was the first time I had seen someone do that within the like sexuality container. And so to me, it was just like, oh my God, this is the coolest thing ever. But you clearly, for those people who don't know, like, you have such a presence on stage, like in front of people, and you are like 100% a performer. But I would love to hear, like, how else you incorporate that performance into your work, and then maybe a little bit of your work into your performance, like the vice versa too.
Yeah, for sure. So I think that the reason why Sire exists is because they are a character that I play, right? And I think that I teach this in my How to Be Your Best Dom and How to Be Your Best Subclass, which is starting this spring. Registration for it's coming very soon. But in teaching people like how to step into their dominant side or their submissive side, you always start with a kernel of truth. And that is for being any kind of actor, portraying any kind of character. In order to become someone else or to portray someone else, there has to be a kernel of truth. That's what is like the root of it, right? And so we take that kernel of truth and we expand on it. So for like my dominant class, I'll start by asking like, where are the places in your life that you feel the most dominant? Is it work? Is it how you order your Starbucks? Is it how you tell your dog to sit? Like, where is the place where you feel the most dominant? Okay, now let's take that kernel of truth and build on it and expand on it. What kind of dom do you want to be? How do you want to show up in play spaces, in kink spaces? Let's build that character. That's still very much you, but it is a character. It's not, it may not necessarily be how you move through your day to day. And in becoming that character, sometimes people do find how they would like to move in their day to day. And what are the aspects of that character that they would rather see within themselves? And so when it comes to like my creative process, in particular writing parodies, because I write a lot of parodies about a lot of different things. Most recently, you've seen Hamilton, haven't you?
On stage? No.
Oh.
But on Disney, yes.
Yeah.
And I literally was listening to the soundtrack today in preparation for this. To help me get into the mood, but yes.
Yeah. So I love the show Hamilton. I think that Hamilton is problematic. It's art and it does the things that art is expected to do, right? And so my organization, the Chrysalis House, we produced a parody of Hamilton, which we call Shamilton, and it focuses on all of the women in the story. So we focus on Eliza and Mariah and Angelica. We don't focus on Alex and his drama. We focus on his impact on the women and the femmes in this space and in this time. And so I rewrote 5 or 6 songs for this first production of it. I wrote a song called It Must Be Nice to Have a Penis Between Your Thighs. We have a rap battle between Eliza and Mariah after the Reynolds pamphlet comes out. We remixed a lot of things. So we remixed Satisfied and we remixed Burn and we remixed Helpless to be able to come from, to tell the perspective that we wanted to tell and to tell the perspective of like how men just, the patriarchy just fucks things up and how everybody like catches all that splash, right? And so even like in a sexuality sense, like I rewrote Savage by Megan Thee Stallion, because I love Megan Thee Stallion, but I rewrote it about masturbation. Right? So talking about how be a masturbation savage, know your pleasure, do the things that feel good for you, be unapologetic about it. That's also being savage. And so it's like taking that, those kernels of my truth, my unapologeticness, my desire to, the fact that I'm gonna say what I'm gonna say and you gonna deal with it after I say it. It's not my job to deal with how you feel about what I said, right? It's like showing up in that space and using that as a vehicle for my teaching, using that energy that like, I'm here to say something. And so you should look and you should hear what I have to say. And now I want to hear what you have to say. And I think that it lends itself into all of the aspects of my life. So I've always been a performer. I've always done musical theater and theater. And so that stage presence is my workshop presence, is my very big, let's have this conversation, let's talk about it. It's no big thing presence, is my same like presence as a therapist. Where I show up in that same unapologetic, I tell all my clients, I'm a Taurus sun and moon and a Virgo rising. So I'm gonna sit here, I'm gonna chill and we're gonna get into it and we're gonna do what we need to do. But I think it is like my knowledge of self and my confidence of self that people really appreciate and that also scares people. And on either side of that coin, that appreciation or that fear, is not my responsibility to manage.
Yeah, I love that. I love it. So would you be down for sharing a little bit about like what the process is like? I know sometimes people will take, they'll take inspiration from like a word, like a specific word, and then build from that, or like a phrase or a concept. Is there a specific way that you build your parody songs?
Yeah. So for Savage, I knew that I was writing the song for Masturbation May. And so I knew that I also wanted to bring the same fire that Megan had, and the same, like, one of the things I love about Megan, she got jokes. She got jokes, she got bars. And so also thinking about what's happening around in life right now. That was 2019 at the start of the pandemic. And so it probably only took me like 15 minutes to write Savage. Yeah.
Wow.
It took me about 15 minutes to parody Savage. It took me a week and a half to write Shamilton.
Oh my gosh.
Flip it and tell that story. So I started up, I can see what the finished process will be. Like, I remember, so funny story about Shamilton is the Chrysalis house, we threw a karaoke party. And at the karaoke party, I ended up like doing some Hamilton songs because I was the host and I needed to show like, you can get on the mic too, people. And so I did some Hamilton songs. And while I was doing the Hamilton songs, one of the board members at the Chrysalis house was like, yo, you're dope at that. We should do some Hamilton stuff. We should do like a parody or something. This is what my co-founder said. She's like, yeah, we should do a parody or something. And I'm like, ha ha ha, guys, you're funny. It's karaoke night. Yay. And the next week, we actually all went to brunch. And so when we're at brunch, like my co-founder and the board member, they had fucking lyrics, they printed out music, and they had a notebook and stuff. And even then too, I was like, ooh, what if we did this? And what if we did that? That would be cool. But I still left brunch being like, hi, when the fuck am I gonna write a script? All the other shit I have to do. Like, that was cool. That was fun. But like, going on with my day. And then a couple days later, my co-founder calls me and she's, hey, we secured a stage. Do you have the script? I was like, what? She was like, yeah, we have a really well-known, we did our performance at the Clock Tower Cabaret, which is like one of the best burlesque clubs in Denver. So she was like, yeah, we secured a stage. We've got a date. We're going to do this show while Hamilton's in town. So that way, do you have the script? And I was like, no, I don't have the script. I thought it was a joke. I wrote it in my journal. Becky had a very funny joke today. Like, what? No, I don't have the script. And so it was like sitting down and like having to put in the energy of being like, okay, what is the story that I want to tell? Doing some research to be like, what were women doing back then? How did Angelica also feel about this back then? And then it was also annoying because these are all like colonizing ass white people. And so it's just like, sitting here trying to paint, I don't know, like that's my issue with Hamilton. It's like my favorite character in Hamilton is Thomas Jefferson, and he's a horrible fucking person in real life.
But yeah, like they're all horrible owners. Like, yeah.
And so it's just like to be like, but even in my parody, I think during Take a Break, that line of like, my dearest Alexander, you must get through to Jefferson. I know that he's a rapist. It's fucked up. I agree. That is like how I switched that up and put that into the song. So we did a lot of that in our parody of calling out just like the whiteness and the anti-blackness, and like even penis between your thighs is all about all of the legislative bullshit that women have to face. We talk about like abortions. We talk about sex work. We talk about, you know, how if you're not white, like when the Constitution was ratified, it was declared that women were not the people. And in actuality, if you weren't white and male, you weren't the people. So when we read that, we the people find these truths to be self-evident, we weren't the people. We didn't find shit because we were not envisioned. We were not in the room. We were not in those discussions. Even I rewrote, it wasn't in this first premiere of the show, but we're going to do it again this summer. I rewrote The Room Where It Happens to talk about Angelica and Alex having sex.
Oh.
Like The Room Where It Happens, and talking about pleasure and like going after your own pleasure and like what that looks like and having that wherewithal to do that, right? And so being able to like, I know that I want to talk about these things. I know that these things are important to me. Here is a vehicle. And so now I'm going to create the road that we're going to drive down in this vehicle to talk about these things in my creative process.
I love that. First of all, you don't have to tell me, a Filipina, how serious karaoke can get.
Yes.
All right. And like how that is basically your like life's performance in front of your family a lot of the time. So I get the inspiration of being like, this is a thing. We need to take this and build something from it. And like, really, my biggest question about that is, how can we get y'all touring? Because I know I'm not the only one.
Send us some money. So I've talked to the cast, and actually what we're about to do is, my partner is the co-ED of an organization that prioritizes youth-adult partnerships and using poetry as a form of activism and a form of knowledge of self. And so because of that, they host an open mic once a month, and they host the open mic at this like media conglomerate. And so what I really want to do is bring together the cast to record the parodies that we wrote. And so that way we can sell the album. Also, because the Chrysalis House is trying to buy a building. We moved out of our space in 2020. The end of 2019, early 2020. And we just haven't had a physical space since then. So for the past couple of years, we've been doing things virtually. But now that we're stepping into this new space, we want a space, because having a space allows for us to show up for community a lot better than just like being virtual and nomadic and popping around places, right? And so we're thinking about recording the album and then selling that as our fundraiser tool. And also because like at the performance, people were like so excited to be at the performance. We sold out both nights. And it was really fun because the Clock Tower was very generous and they gave us the door. They gave the performers both nights. And so we had some people who had never been on stage before ever in their life. This was their first performance ever. And we were able to give them a very nice check for their work.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. And now we're like, we were joking about it. I just saw Alex. She was here. Alex, her name is Alex. She played our Alexander Hamilton. This was her first time on stage ever. And so we were joking like, yo, if Alex ever wants to perform again, because in Colorado, they're real good for not paying Black people, Black performers. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, yo, if Alex ever wants to perform again and she goes somewhere and they're like, yeah, we can give you like $50. She could be like, oh no, I made 6, 7, 8 times that my first performance. I'm not taking this $50 from you. And so we're able to like build that advocacy and being able to support performers who might just be performers, who might be sex worker performers, who might be hovering that like creative space. And so it's really exciting to be able to do that.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Actually, could you tell us a little bit more? No, you answered the question. Okay. You answered the question. Don't worry. I ended up like kind of like deviating from that a little bit. But actually, could you tell us a little bit more about what the Chrysalis House is? Yeah. And like how that got built and
For sure. So the Chrysalis House is a sex positive collaborative, or what we like to call a community resource center. So Becky Taha Blue, my co-founder, and I, we actually ended up meeting because we were both looking for a place to be able to have sex positive conversations, for a place to be able to engage with sexual topics and sexual themes, for the place to be able to create a safe space for sex workers and to support QT BIPOC folks. We were looking for a place to do that. I wanted that place because I could not find a place to let me teach what I wanted to teach to save my fucking life. Like I was like, I want to talk about vulvas and pleasure. And I went to this women's health center and they told me no. And I was like, but vulvas, what do you mean no? And so I just could not find a place to teach to save my life. Becky had been dealing with a lot of the same stuff too, of just not being able to be in a place where she felt safe and where she felt good and her identities were like supported. And so we came together and we formed the Chrysalis House. And we were like, just every time we do something, we both look at each other, shit, we did that. So like when we found our first building, we're sitting here standing in the building and we're like, we have the Chrysalis House has like a fucking brick and mortar. Like we did that. Like we finished Shamilton and we were like, remember when I thought this was just a joke? And now like we've sold out 2 nights of this show like that. And we at the Chrysalis House, we're in the process of becoming a nonprofit. Nice. And so we have a couple different tenets. So first we have our sexuality education tenet, which both me and Becky provide education for. We do a lot of like POC-centered kink events to help make kink a lot more accessible for people of color, primarily Black people. Do a lot of education to help people engage in sex work safely. So what does that look like? Navigating what the laws look like. We do education on tantra and showing up in tantric situations, connecting to self and universe and your partners through the through the sexual energy of the universe and through your own sexual energy, and even modifying that energy to do other things. So a lot of like my creative energy is like my sex energy that I just shake and pour somewhere else, right? And so we do that information. We also do community support. So we host a clothing drive. We host a food drive. We make safe use kits, whether that is clean needles or clean like packaging for people to be able to use their substances safely, because I can't make you stop. But if I can give you a clean needle, I'd like to give you a clean needle. So we do that. We also support the community, however called. So like during the protests in Denver, we made safe riot packs filled with like powdered milk and water and a snack, just in case people got pepper spray, because powdered milk is how you can clear that pepper spray off of your face. So we dropped those all along the protest routes. So that way people would be able to, people who could put their bodies on the line, we wanted to support them doing that, because I have asthma and allergies. I can't be pepper sprayed. Like I can't put myself in that position, but I can help keep you safe if that's something that you can do. And so that's like the commitment that we made. We ran a safe house during the protest, so that way people could have a space to come. And then we also have our mental health tenant, our mental health wing, where we really want to prioritize the mental health of marginalized populations. We get grants and scholarships so people can get free therapy. We work with other organizations to help to make sure that we actually are prioritizing the mental health of sex workers and QT BIPOC folks, because those are two of the most marginalized groups of people who need therapy, who don't get it for stigma or finances or what have you. And then we're also very heavy in the sex work decriminalization game. So we do a lot of like education for government conglomerates and for regular people about what sex work actually is and what sex work is not. And how, because people don't know what it is, the laws that they create make sex work dangerous, but sex work in itself is not dangerous. And so all of these obstacles that have to be overcome in order to do that work, that's the issue. The work is not the issue.
I'm actually going to get into that conversation next week with my guest who has her own podcast and is also a sex worker and does amazing stuff. But there's, the amount of misinformation that exists out there and the like fucking with the language in order to try to make sense of it, just like, It boggles. There have been many times where I'm like staring at an account on Instagram and I'm like, wait a minute, what? I literally have to reread it like several times because I'm like, I did not think that you thought this way. And now I have to unfollow you because just the way that they're like skewing the way that people talk about sex work is just like, no. But y'all are doing a lot. Like fantastic that there's a place like that, because there should be chapters everywhere. So there should be places like that for every place, because the fight is still happening.
We're working on it.
All of this shit.
We're working on it. We also partner with organizations in other states. So if you have a sex positive organization somewhere else, please reach out to us. We would love to have you on like our community resources list. We would love to support your work and your effort. Because we know that if you reach out to us, you're supporting our work and our efforts too. And this is not a fight that you do individually. No fight to the government or to society is a fight you do individually. You find your lane and you rock your lane and you pull in others in other lanes and you all go together.
That's so true. That is so true. What would you say is the most, because again, y'all are doing a lot. What part, if you could say that there is one, part, I guess you can say more than one, but what is like one of the most rewarding parts of that work that you're doing with them?
Yeah. One of my favorite things that we do at the Chrysalis House are our monthly munches. So we throw a munch and we have a theme where we talk about whatever. And so because we haven't had a building, our munches have been virtual. And so we've been getting participation from outside of Colorado, from people who want to come and talk to us. And so that's been great. So we do our munch the last Thursday of the month. And this month, our munch's theme is sex work. What is it? What is it not? And we're going to be able to, and our munches are always very like free flow. Like we do our best to be like, here is theme. Let's talk about things under theme. Whatever comes up, let's talk about it. And so sometimes we stay on theme. Sometimes we go elsewhere. Sometimes we like ebb and flow in the conversation. Just takes us anywhere. But like the point of these munches is to come together and have a space where it, where you can be free to talk about these things. So we have people who come, they're like, I have no idea what the hell this is. We have people who come and they're like, I have very negative ideas associated around this. So I'm very interested in processing and learning more. We have people who come and eat all our chips and don't say anything. And that is also great participation. You're in the space. You don't have to, you don't have to do anything that you don't want to do. And so through that, then we're able to invite people to, like, if we get this space, we're working on some things. And so some of the big things that I really am interested in doing is being able to have our munches be back in real life, being able to do cannabis centered events, being able to have like a 420 like study sesh, come through and like just hang out with us and don't smoke, whatever. Come through and like vibe and chill, right? And so that's what community is. Community is just providing a space in which you can feel seen and accepted and heard and feel safe and feel comfortable. And so that's absolutely what we want to be able to provide.
Yes, yes. I really hope that it all comes through. Obviously, the virtual piece been necessary in the past couple of years. And I love that it has widened your circle. And also there's something about the like physically being in space with people that just, it's just hard to replace that. And I don't know, I don't know if that's the extroverted Taurus talking, because it's definitely not the let me stay in bed. Believe me, I have a very cozy situation and I'm just like, if I could just cozy up in my blanket all day and do amazing things, I would. Yes.
Let's take a quick break. Check in with your body. What do you need? Do you need to stretch? Do you need to use the restroom? Do you need some extra water? Do whatever you need to take care of you, and we'll be right back. Are you looking to unlock your inner truth to finally live a life of empowerment? My dear friend and fellow Filipina, Coach Amabel helps women and femmes of color to overcome limiting beliefs so they can live their lives of vitality and freedom. Explore the one-on-one and group coaching possibilities by scheduling a connection call with them today. Drop a note at amabelnarvaez.com or head on over to their Instagram at amabelnarvaez. That's AmabelNarvaez.
Let's get back into, because the idea of munches, right, has centered around the kink community mainly, because like, I think it's a great name for literally hanging out, because it means that there's food involved.
Yeah.
Is how I interpret it. And so I feel like it all opens it up to folks who aren't necessarily 100% identified or even like remotely identified with kink spaces.
Yeah.
But it like really opens it up for them. But what do you think, specifically about kink, what do you think people still like misunderstand about it?
I think that primarily communities of color and Black communities in particular is whenever I say, yeah, I'm a pro-dominatrix and I engage in kink, first thing they say is, oh, that's white people's shit. That's not shit that we do. That's white people's shit. And it makes sense, right? Because if you Google kink, first thing that comes up is 50 Shades of Grey. The first thing that comes up is cisgender appearing fully able-bodied and minded, appearing male-bodied, appearing people in charge, female body appearing people in submissive states, and pain and red asses and blood and flesh and shit that doesn't look enjoyable, right? And so you're like, why would anybody lay there and get beaten Black and blue and get bruised and all of that? That's not anything that like we need to be doing. Also, I think another thing is like when you look at those images, a lot of the activities that we see look like a lot of the activities done to our ancestors without consent. And so it absolutely makes sense if that's all because that's all you're presented with. And so people, I think when my approach to kink is that kink is a political space. It is based in teaching advocacy. It is a form of activism. It is a form of reclamation. It is a form of empowerment. It's a form of freedom. And when Black people in particular, some of the things that we learn as a Black people in the society is that our bodies are not our own. Value is only tied to our labor. Our worth is only tied to what we can do and how we can show up and what we can not do, what we cannot emote, what we cannot say. In kink and BDSM, the first thing that I teach people is that you have to speak. Like, it is my job as the dom to run this environment. It is your job as the submissive or the person I'm playing with to create the container in which we can play. What do you want to do? What do you not want to do? What do you want to experience while you're here? What do you want to feel while you're here? And it's my job to give you those check-ins to make sure, are we still in the place that we want to be? Do you have everything you need to feel good and safe in this environment? Do we have trust? In my first sessions with a lot of clients, we don't even do anything. We talk. We build trust. We create a container in which you feel like you can be allowed to let yourself be here. But when we see those images of like asses beaten and bloody, people are like, ah, that shit looks like it hurts. That's pain. But kink is not about pain. Kink is about presence. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you need extra help to be present. But we're doing this to help you be present, to help you be in this space, to help you be in your body. And there are a lot of sensations to elicit that. Which for you may not work for someone else, but we're not going to know unless you ask for it. You trust me to give it to you and we see what comes out of it.
That's such a good way to put that. Because yeah, I do feel like people just assume that it immediately means, like pain and hurt. It's really much more varied. I feel like it's akin to how many people think just about like sex in general, right? Mm-hmm. It's very specific to like, more often than not, people are talking about like penis and vagina sex. And there's a whole new world that's out there that can really expand the definition of it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And that's a very like cis-heterative normative view of what sex and pleasure can be. And so in kink, we get to say, no, like your pleasure is unique and individual. What does your pleasure feel like for you? Centering yourself, which is another thing that, you know, Black women and Black femmes, we have a really hard time with. And women of color is centering ourselves and prioritizing ourselves because we have to carry everything. We have to be the ones who are fine. And you're not fine. And because you're not fine, it doesn't mean that you're failing. I hear that so much from my clients. So you know, I'm doing a horrible job because I'm not fine. Not fine does not mean you're failing. Not fine means that you're human and you've been conditioned to deny that fact. And it is vehemently something that your body, your spirit, know is wrong. And you're running from what your body knows. And that's making it even worse.
I was going to say, would you say from your like therapy, really in all of your work, have you had to do a lot of, hey, also, we're in a pandemic. Like people kind of forget that.
Oh my fucking God. So often people, I don't know why it's so hard for me to focus and concentrate. I don't know why it's hard for me to sleep. The world's on fucking fire, yo. The world's on fire.
Yeah.
I don't know why I haven't responded to all 200 emails. Because it's 5 o'clock and you get off work at 5 o'clock and the world's on fire. I feel like I'm like having to reaffirm that for all my clients. The world that once was not good for you, and it damn sure ain't good for you right now. What are your values? What do you want for yourself? What's driving your decisions right now? And what would be better as a driver? You know, and I definitely have to reaffirm that for myself all the time too. Even like today, fucking time zones. Like as soon as I saw your email, I was like, oh my fucking God. Like... it's the Virgo. It's my Virgo rising. Just want to do what I tell people I can do. And so when I don't do that, then I feel like it makes me look bad. And then I deal with like my insecurity of, can you actually do the things that you say that you can do? Or are you just out here like fronting, being an imposter, right? And so I have to pull all that in for me and being like, yo, time zones are fucking hard. Time zones are a colonized ass thing. That's not a thing
that really are.
I'm sitting here trying to assimilate into a system that was never designed for me and doesn't give a fuck about me. And thankfully, like I have you who, fuck it. Yeah. Let's get together. So, you know, it's a lot of, that's what therapy is. And I think people think that like therapy is like just talking about your problems. No, therapy is not what happens in the 50 minutes you spend with your therapist. Therapy is what happens in all the other space when you're not in session. It's, can you reaffirm yourself? Do you have the tools to be able to do whatever it is that you need to do? Can you acknowledge your patterns and can you break it? Therapy does not happen. Therapy does not solely happen in the therapy space. 90% of therapy is done outside of the session.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. I have to say, I also had that moment yesterday. First, I was getting into a conversation with people who were like debating why an intern was asking questions and like asking for like help, references and all this stuff. And I was like,
intern.
But people were like, oh, that person should know their place. And I was like, hey, maybe that's, I don't know what people who are younger than me think about the world now, except that it seems like they're catching on to what a crock of shit it is. And like, maybe think about that perspective. Like, maybe I'm wrong. And also just consider it. And then I messaged the like group chat and I was like, I don't know why I'm just like, not doom scrolling, but just like scrolling on social media. Like, why am I doing this at 1 a.m.? And they were all like, because you are probably anxious and depressed and you're a parent. And, mm-hmm. and I'm just like, oh yeah, life is fucking hot. There's a lot of shit happening and the world is on fire. Oh my God.
Yep.
And yeah, the reminders are like definitely necessary. There should just be an app for that. Just like, ding, don't forget. The world's on fire. The world's on fire.
You're literally doing your best. People are like, I don't know if it's my best. If you could do better, would you do better? Do you think you can do better? And you're just like consciously being like, let me fuck this up. You are literally doing your best. Your best looks different every day. That doesn't make it any less. You're all just doing our best.
Exactly. Exactly. So what is something about the sexuality space that you think people are not ready to hear? And you're just like, it's time, bitches.
I think this is a good question for us to go out on. What do I think people need to hear that they're not ready to hear? I think people need to hear and believe that you are only ever responsible for you. Oftentimes people like to think, oh, I did this because you made me mad, or I did this because I was raised this way, or I did this because this is how I usually do things. All of the, once you acknowledge what your patterns become a choice. And so you are actively choosing to do these things. These things are not happening to you. You're making the choice to respond this way. Mm. So even when it comes to sex and sexuality, people have issues with the fact that people are gay. And so if we just pass a bill that says you can't say gay, less people are going to be gay. No, you have feelings about queerness and those feelings are your responsibility. You're trying to avoid those feelings by putting a law onto me, but your feelings are your problem. Your feelings are not my problem. It is not my responsibility to not make you feel. It is your responsibility to feel and move through it. And so sometimes you need help with that. And so the more that like people start to accept, like you are only responsible for you, even you as a partner, you as a parent, you as an employee, you are only responsible for the choices that you can make. Other people make all their own choices and you have no idea what choices people are making. And so when you take responsibility for somebody else's emotions, you rob them of the opportunity to learn and grow and potentially have a chance to break their patterns and their cycles. Right. And so we have to be a lot more selfish as a community. I think that we really need to, I think that girl, you need to get your nut and forget what that man said. I think that you need to sit on their face. And if they die, I think you need to learn how to do that activity that you're interested in, even though your partner don't want to do it. Maybe you need a new partner. Maybe you need to go learn how to do the thing and you're going to find bae at the thing that you learned how to do. I think that we need to take a lot more of like, being okay with taking up our own space. And if we all were to do that, if we were all to stay in our own fucking lane, there would be immediate chaos, but we would be able to move from that chaos into some shit that actually feels safe for everyone.
Yeah. Yeah. I believe that for sure. Ooh, Okay, final question. What are you currently finding pleasure in at this very moment?
Oh, Chiwali. At this very moment, my partner's the best partner ever, and they just bought me the Spice Girls Blockhead Lego set. So I've put together Scary Spice and Baby Spice, and I'm putting together Posh Spice right now. And then soon I'll have all 5 Spice Girls. So I find a lot of joy and a lot of pleasure in doing my Lego. I am really enjoying being on stage and being able to perform and do theater and get acne breakouts because there's too much makeup on my freaking face.
Oh my goodness.
And so I'm enjoying being in that space. And I also am looking forward to a lot of the trips that I have planned. Yes, I have passport, will travel. So I'm very much excited to. I'm going to the Association of Black Sexologists and Clinicians conference in St. Thomas. And I'm going to Nice, France with my partner because they have a James Baldwin conference. And it just works out that I have to have a layover in Toronto where my favorite tattoo artist is. So I'm going to be able to swing through and get some work from her. Shout out to Nate. And so I'm very excited about that. So there's so many things to look forward to. And I'm also centering, what do I want to do? What do I not want to do? What's going to be good for me while I'm in this journey, in this process, and what's not? And so it's difficult. But it's such a learning and empowering experience, and I'm really appreciative of the difficulty.
Oh, I love it. Okay, actually, one final question. How can people find you?
Yeah, so the best way to keep up with me is right here on the Instagrams. Make sure you follow me. And then in my bio, you can actually find your way to my website. And if you sign up for my newsletter, then you get personal little newsletters from me. I try real hard to do once a month. I don't do more than once a month. Sometimes I don't even do that. So when you hear from me, it's always an exciting time to hear from me. And on my YouTube channel, where I try to post a video once a month. I try. There's videos. Hey. There's new videos coming. So
there you go. Hey, that's awesome. Oh my gosh. Shanae, I'm so glad that we got to spend time together.
Thank you.
Well, friends, it's time to go our separate ways. I hope you're feeling as satiated and stimulated from today's podcast as I am. Make sure you rate and review today's episode on Apple Podcasts and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. Lastly, head over to rawbarpod.com. That's rawbarpod.com to find out how you can connect with my guests and me, and how you can be a part of the Raw Bar Regulars. See you next time.